And we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar doing a current movie event. And I guess we're going to call this a Oscar Sprint profile in a way, right?
Yeah, it's more of a movie event. It really works as a landmark achievement for a new genre,
sure.
I would say.
Yeah, it's very interesting. There are some twists and turns, so we don't want to spoil those off the top. We'll give you a non-spoiler and a spoiler section of this just for kicks and giggles. As to whether or not it is an Oscar movie, that remains to be seen. Stay tuned. We'll get into all of that. But welcome to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I am your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
Also Mike, doing Searching today. This was a big hit at Sundance.
Yes.
It is a part of the screen life genre that has just been coined recently. I remember it dropping on Twitter from a recent Hollywood Reporter article. I was like, that's
right.
A good name
there
for
you go.
It.
Screen life. All
I was
right.
Trying to come up with a name for the genre and, you know, become rich and famous myself for doing so. But it didn't happen.
I feel like a proud parent every time Cal Penn or John Cho do so. It's like, look how far Harold
True.
And Kumar have come.
How many Look times we watched those movies in college.
Yeah, good for them. But yes, it is the John Cho vehicle. Deborah Messing also playing a big part. Searching is the movie we are going to cover today in both the Oscar Sprint fashion, so a non-spoiler and a spoiler section. Probably going to be a little bit shorter than normal. We'll see what happens, but Mike's going to start us off as he does with cast and crew.
Yes, co-written and directed by Anish Chaganti. It is his feature film debut here. He's done a bunch of shorts. Mike's going to have another little story about him in the spec section.
Yeah.
Another month, another strong feature film debut, though, getting a major studio release. That's been a new trend these days.
Well, where's the next big director coming from? Where's the big auteurs? And they've been coming out of the woodwork from whether it's on
this
Netflix
year.
Or this one. You know, they're all over.
This year, Ari Aster. This year, Bo Burnham.
Sure.
Last year, Jordan Peele and Greta Gerwig.
Yeah.
You know, in these Oscar or Ogsner, whatever I was going to say
hard
there.
G, yeah.
In the Oscar conversation.
One of them's
really
probably going to find their way nominated, right? You would think.
Yeah, I think Bo Burnham. I think Ari Aster's still going to have legs at some point. I think people really like that movie. I don't know if it was too hard of a horror movie, though. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
I was a bit puzzled by that preceding short film, Mike.
Yeah.
However, I must say I really enjoy short films because I whistle in my spare time. Short! Whatever that was. Short films before...
Preceding the big picture?
Features,
yeah. Yeah, it's not bad. We had that with The Incredibles 2. Bao was kind of the short film.
I loved that Bao.
It was very charming.
It made me cry. It made me starving hungry.
Yes, hey, very hungry.
And it made me rethink my whole life. This movie didn't do that.
No, this was kind of a quick... This is more of a YouTube skit, honestly.
True.
Is what it was,
but
it made me laugh. Yeah,
made
I thought
laugh.
It was very funny.
A couple of chuckles. I don't know if that was the tone that they wanted to set for a
murder
mystery kind of thing.
Right, that's a good point. Yeah, not a great lead-in, but
it worked.
Who knows?
But it worked. I mean, it was strange because, like, you think like Christopher Nolan or Steven Spielberg, somebody on top of the mountain of Hollywood, would bestow the opportunity for a first-time filmmaker,
right.
You know, to have a short film precede their feature.
Yeah,
this guy's just making his first.
It's a good point, yeah, because it's like he does run the risk of the short film being more popular than his feature film.
Can
but thankfully,
you
that wasn't
hear
the case.
The jealousy in my voice right now? I'm trying not. But yeah, I understand.
What's so great about their short film?
Yeah, okay, this guy, what is he, letting his classmate?
Joking.
His little classmate getting in some publicity as well? The jerk. No, I mean...
Your time will come.
The writing of those coattails? Ride some coattails much? No, I enjoyed the short film. We enjoyed this whole film, so...
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Co-written by Sev Ohanian. He is the producer with 23 credits on IMDb, most notably for Fruitvale Station. So he's got a couple
picture,
more
yeah.
films coming out as well. Starring John Cho as David Kim. That's a big name here. Father of the Missing Margot. Cho is perhaps best known as Harold from the Harold and Kumar trilogy.
Hell yeah, he is.
Yeah, his career started to accelerate after his character came up with the term MILF in the first American Pie movie. In fact, the name of his character on IMDb is, quotes, John MILF Guy number 2.
Oh my God, is that serious?
That is serious.
Amazing.
Cho is also Sulu in the Star Trek franchise. He is a mainstay in past television series history of Flash Forward, Go On, Sleepy Hollow, Selfie, American Dad, and The Exorcist. But lately, John Cho has been putting some excellent work in out there in dramatic roles such as last year's Columbus and this year's Gemini. He played a detective in this year's Gemini. I love them in both of those. He will be coming out in the Tiffany Haddish comedy The Oath in October. He's filming Grudge, I guess this is
a remake of
a reboot.
Yeah, of The Grudge.
The Grudge.
All right.
He's filming it with Andrea Riseborough and a nice cast there. I mean, it sounds like there's a ghost with a grudge, so it's got to be a remake, right?
I was never big into that film when it came out. Me with neither. The Sarah Michelle Gellar iteration.
Didn't work. He's also attached to an untitled Star Trek sequel coming out. I hope.
It comes out, yeah.
I hope beyond hope that's a Tarantino thing, that's going to happen. Deborah Messing is the other big name from Searching here. She is, of course, longtime Will and Grace veteran actress there.
Great, a lot of Emmys.
I watched a couple episodes, and they're funny. I mean, I never rewatched the whole series like I did with Frasier, Friends.
Yeah, I never got into them really at all. I never really even sat down to like watch a couple. The only one I did watch was like the series finale, and it did end in a touching way, and that's it. That's my exposure to it.
Whenever I watched, I enjoyed it. It wasn't like a ongoing thing for me. Her film work, Deborah Messing, before Searching, includes some eclectic choices. Like, she never really caught on. The Mothman Prophecy. 05's The Wedding Date, which I do remember being awful. 08's The Women, which got creamed, I thought, critically. As Annette Bening had a lot of big name actresses in there.
I remember it, yeah.
In 2017's TV movie, Dirty Dancing, Deborah Messing was a surprise casting here, to say the least, Mike. A police detective and
chops.
A drama mystery thriller.
Yeah, I'd love to see her in more stuff like this.
Very impressed with her work in this. She had kind of the juiciest role of the group as well. So Searching also stars Sarah Soan as Pamela Kim, David's wife, John Cho's wife. Joseph Lee plays John Cho's brother, Peter, and Michelle La plays Margot. I thought she did a terrific job.
Same here.
She's no Elsie Fisher, but she does a nice job here.
She more than substantiated her role in this movie.
Some production notes. I'm going to talk about that new genre here quite a bit. From a Hollywood Reporter, article, director turned producer Timur Bekmambetov. This is the writer director of the Night Watch series.
Okay,
in Russia, that was a vampire series. The first of those movies was pretty good. It was very entertaining. It was high special effects. High production values for a Russian film at the time. He came over and he did Wanted. That was the Angelina Jolie, shows her butt, Morgan Freeman says motherfuckers, curve bullet movie.
Yeah, I remember the curving of the bullet. Yeah,
you remember that one. And then he does Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter on a huge budget.
Because everybody asked for it.
It's an enormous flop. It is a disaster.
What a weird... I mean, I don't mind it, actually.
Really?
I saw it back in the day. It was fine for what it was.
I think that was one of the movies I stopped halfway through. Sometimes, you know? If a movie doesn't get a good tomato meter score, I turn into a complete snob.
Oh,
and if I do give it a chance...
You're one of those.
I'm one of those jerks. But I think that's what happened here. Ben-Hur is his... second follow-up disaster movie.
That was a big flop, yeah.
I remember that had a bigger budget. Than
whatever
huge.
I think that budget was in nine digits, actually.
So Bekmambetov's production company, Bezalev's, he had a meeting where his colleague was webcasting or screencasting whatever she was doing on her laptop. And at the end of the meeting, she forgot to shut off that screencast.
Ooh.
Now, he watched her, and whoever was in his boardroom, watched her click around on her laptop for a while there. And before he could call her back or before he could
give word to her that he
was watching her doing what she was doing, he realized something. He realized he was getting to know her better, or she was doing things, you know, to give away characterization about herself, right?
Yeah.
And he, as a director, as a writer, as a storyteller, Timur just realized that this could be something cinematic.
How about that?
So with a snafu, they came up with this entirely new genre, and Unfriended, and then Unfriended Dark Web. Mm-hmm. Unfriended was really the first example of it. Was made for $1 million, and it made 64.
That's what I have that in my notes too. There's no listed budget for this one, but you figure it had to have been made for couch cushion money.
The biggest budget any one of these movies have gotten is one that was directed by Bekmambetov. It was $2.3 million for Profile, which released in March. I think it released overseas. It did not do very well.
Kind of a blip on the radar.
So Searching is less than that.
Yeah, exactly. You figure, what do you need? You just need basically a good camera and maybe some green screen and effect work, but that's it.
Searching, maybe it had a marketing budget at this point, but Searching probably had a very minuscule budget. It's already made whatever you're going to talk about it making. Even the sequel to Unfriended Dark Web there has made $9 million, $8 million. Again, $1 million budget.
Exactly.
So it's in the black. Apparently, there are 14 quote unquote screen life movies in development now at Bezalev's. They're the forerunner in this genre.
Get that market saturation up.
To continue talking about it here for a second, there's really no traditional cinematography because they feed all the visuals through the computer.
Yeah, there's no cinematography, at least that's not the focus of it, but the editing is pretty well done. There's a decent amount of editing that goes into something like this.
Bekmambetov talks about how it's not traditional editing necessarily, though.
So sure.
Again, it's all feeding through the computer screen, and they're using the actual apps and equipment, it seems like, and they're kind of capturing what they do on the computer. So
it really is fascinating. It's definitely worth a look.
It's been compared, this new genre of screen life has been compared to the Blair Witch / found footage genre of the early
2000s. Absolutely.
I'm wondering here if we'll see kind of a decade's worth of movies with it. Like it went from the Blair Witches to the Paranormal Activities with Cloverfield in the mix.
I don't think there's any question. Anytime a genre is found or comes out and it's proven to be bankable, and this one already, like you just talked about, there's been a couple movies that have put it in the black. It's easy to make money off of. It's low budget. I don't know. I don't really see how it would have a big budget even.
Right.
I don't know how you would do that. So anytime that proves to be a solid, reliable source of revenue, it's going to be milked for all it's worth, of course. Studios won't be able to get enough of it.
They had a $64 million success off of a $1 million budget. Now they have a critical success, which Searching here.
Which is already made. It's been out for 4 days and made a decent number.
Yeah, it was supposed to make $3 million. On Wikipedia, the projections, and it made whatever you're going to say here in a minute. With specs, Mike.
Yeah, let's do some specs for Searching. Nice job there. Written by Anish Shiganti and Sev Ohanian. Anish Shiganti also was the director. He, according to The Ringer, he had an interview with Sean Fennessy, who gets a lot of big names, and he talked to Ari Aster, he's talked to Greta Gerwig in the past. He gets all these kind of big first-time names right before they explode and gets them on and talks to them and gets a lot of good information out of them. And he revealed that he just straight up left a job at Google. He was there working for Google. Again,
that means he's a high-powered, capable individual.
That means
it's
he's a very capable individual.
It's hard to get a job at Google, as all of you know.
It means he's a very intelligent man. Yes. But he was an employee at Google. He had this idea for this screenplay, just got to writing it, and went to get it into production. Left his job at Google, got this made.
Now, I think there was a short film he made for Google.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if he was making films for Google, if that was his job necessarily or what. We probably should listen to Sean Fennessy's podcast there, but
there's so many hours in the day. Yes, you're right. He probably was doing that. Now you alluded to his IMDb page is full of shorts already, so he did have experience as a filmmaker, and one of his shorts actually seemed to be commissioned from Google itself. So he it's not like he was a total neophyte that was just like an engineer one day and said, I'm going to try screenwriting. No, he was already privy to that world in itself. But Searching is his first big major film debut. It did debut January 21st, 2018 at Sundance Film Festival, went limited August 24th, and finally went wide a week later, just a couple days ago, August 31st. So it's only been wide for about 4 days now. 102-minute runtime on a PG-13 rating. Produced, like Mike said, by Bazilev's company, because Russians are everywhere in America now. We know that. Screen Gems and Stage 6 Films, distributed by Sony Pictures. No listed budget because it's a new film, so that's not really
a
surprise.
It's got to be under 2.3, though.
It does have to be under 2.3, according to the information you made. So let's call it $2 million, I guess, if just for the sake of these numbers coming up.
I don't know.
So the initial box office numbers, if you go by that marking, it's
already
spectacular.
In the black.
6.2 million domestic box office, with another 6.5 million coming from internationally thus far, meaning the worldwide box office stands at $12.7 million after being wide for only a few days. We're talking six times its budget already after 4 days. Not bad.
And those cinema scores are up there, Mike?
Yeah, though this is being one of those, it seems to be a financial success, but it's certainly a critical success. Now, keep in mind that it's early, so take that with a grain of salt. But if it is early, this is kind of how you want to start. 7.8 IMDb rating on 4,000 reviews. So if you're going to start early on IMDb, you want to be up in those eights or nines range and then come down from there. 91% certified fresh Rotten Tomato score and 137 critical reviews, 124 of them being positive. Average critical score of 7.4 out of 10. That's a very high number.
That's a good number.
Audience score of 86% on Rotten Tomatoes on 1,500 plus reviews. Average of 4.2 out of 5. Another high mark.
4.2 audience score, audience rating, right? Yeah. That's really strong.
That's up there. Carries a 72 meta rating with a high of 91 from Kim Hughes of Original Sin, as she is one of the 12 critics out of 30 to grade this film at an 80 or higher. Only 4 scores of a 60 or lower thus far, with the back end coming from Daniel Egan of the Film Journal International, who gave it a 35.
Mike and Oscar's a good name. It has a pun in it. We should have named our project here after Antonio Banderas, Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, you think so?
Mid-90s erotical thriller.
Yeah, well, that's on us. Next time, our next podcast, we could do From Dusk Until Mike. I don't have a cinema score. It's too early for cinema scores, so I don't have much.
I guess I meant audience scores. Yeah, the audience scores are up. It's getting a lot of high praise from us.
People love this. Yeah, it seems to be a well-embraced picture.
And it did win a couple awards at Sundance there, Mike. It won the Audience Best of Next Awards. It won the Alfred Sloan Award there. So two big awards from the Sundance Film Festival.
You get the feeling that people are kind of all agree that this is kind of our new horror genre lies, at least.
Yes.
A new thriller genre.
Honestly, I wonder if I was a little overhyped for this one. A lot of my favorite critics out there had this as one of their top movies of the year.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm there for it, but I'm certainly, to tease my review, happy with my movie-going experience. I certainly would rate it high. But I wonder if my expectations were too high. I think I was also a little bit skeptical of this quote-unquote gimmick of storytelling.
Which, how could you not? Anything new is going to be over-scrutinized.
So I'm
of course
very mixed in terms of my expectations to takeaways. I'm not mixed in my review, but I'm mixed in my takeaways because I'm a little bit underwhelmed in terms of, it's not one of my best movies of the year, but a little bit overwhelmed with the prowess of the filmmaking and with the capability or the prospects of future films in this genre. I thought I was not bored. I was not disoriented.
Yeah.
I was not, in terms of the visuals, it worked for me. So
yeah, I'm kind of with you. I don't know that I expected one of the best films of the year, but I expected high marks. I don't think it's going to be Oscar nominated in any category. You said editing, maybe. I mean, editing usually goes in line with best picture, so we'll see.
We're reviewing a momentous film.
Yeah,
here,
this is kind of a big deal, and
it's a movie event.
It is. It's actually an event. It might be a landmark picture as far as where films go from here. But I'm with you. I did have high expectations. I don't think I was disappointed. This is a very solid movie. I think it's definitely worth a watch.
Definitely delivered mystery thriller goods.
Certainly, without question.
And I kind of compare it to an earlier film I saw this year, Unsane. I know you watched that on demand recently.
That's fair.
You know, it's kind of on that level for me, which is a very strong movie going,
visceral filmmaking,
movie watching
your
experience.
Face. Yeah, no, that's a good comparison. Yeah, totally.
All right, so some Oscar lens. It really does not have kind of Oscars momentum at this stage. Gold Derby, Next Best Picture, Awards Circuit. They don't really have it anywhere in terms of their projections. Again, we're reviewing it because it's a momentous, genre, innovative kind of movie.
We wanted this to be Oscar worthy.
We've had this on our schedule forever.
Exactly.
We didn't want to deviate. We wanted to see this. We both wanted to see this. We've been previewing it on a couple different occasions with Oscar preview trailer episodes, obviously the monthly previews we do, and we knew we wanted to see it. We've wanted to see it. But it's kind of like one of those movies where, what would you say, Mike? Do you need to see this in theaters, or could you wait for it on video in terms of
watch it on your laptop?
Right.
I mean, I think that'd be kind of the coolest effect with how it's presented. But I don't think you need, quote unquote, to see it in theaters. I don't think it's one of those overly theatrical and overly cinematic experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's purposeful. I don't think they're lacking in any aspect, certainly.
And yet, if you go to the movies to see it, it does deliver.
Sure. Absolutely, without question.
So I thought the editing and the cinematography, very strong. I liked how we went into a lot of close-ups within the screen. I was not expecting...
Creative. Very creative.
I was not expecting the creativity in terms of the framing and of course, the editing here. I was happy about that because I was worried, irrationally worried, that we were just going to get kind of a static shot of the screen and we're only going to exist in the screen. I know I saw a riveting trailer for it, and yet my brain going into the movie the other day was just like, am I just going to get bored with what I'm seeing in this movie? Is that going to happen?
The creativity and the storytelling, I think, also deserves highlighting. The fact that they, I mean, this isn't a spoiler by any means, but they have to relay the fact that the mom passed away and is no longer in the picture. They get through that in the first, 3 minutes of the film, right. And they do it without any dialogue, really, through very effective use of the computer.
Now, listen, there's a Pixar movie out there, I won't say which one, that pulls off that beginning of a movie montage better than this movie. But this movie, in terms of a narrative device, it's essential and it works
so
well, and it sets up those two central characters so well.
Yeah, we've said, and we are speaking glowingly about this for this reason, just because you're not an Oscars movie doesn't mean you are a bad movie. This is a really good movie.
Yeah, I wrote down, I mean, to me, the screenplay is the star of this production, like you just said. I think the best original screenplay buzz should be there, at least in the top 40. Like, I can't imagine this movie not being a top 25 screenplay of the year.
It should get a nod. Yeah, it should be talked about there. It should probably be talked about for editing. I could see a world in which Deborah Messing is talked about for supporting, even though I think she would be distant third on those three on that
list.
But
I'm surprised that there's a list of 40 original screenplays, and this is not breaking that list.
Right.
It's got to be. Right now, maybe it's not my top 5, but it's probably my top 15.
And
nobody's seen every movie out there, even with the people who are hopping the globe to see everything that's being offered at the festival.
Especially thus far, have we talked about a couple times how original screenplay is kind of not the most loaded category this year.
Correct. So I think it's a very effective mystery thriller, whodunit, why done it. I'm in here. There's lots of twists and turns.
The spoiler section, I think, is great.
Sure.
We're going to get into that. I think that whole aspect was handled.
This
really
feels
well.
Like a Netflix true crime
Terry
doc.
Terry Crews crime doc. Yes.
Yes. I think it's like a Terry Crews dance gif of crime docs.
There you go. Way to bring that in.
I'm great at improv. I'm always yes anding you. I'm so good.
I don't. Yeah, you could see this coming out on Netflix, certainly. I think it's good that, again, a major picture production studio got their hands on it first.
Yeah, but
put it
slammed
on
into an hour and 45. It's not over
it's 10 hours.
I mean, this is a tight script, a tight story. Really works. Mike, we want to get into some performances here. I thought John Cho has been raising his game as an actor for a while now.
So hard.
I loved him in the last few dramatic movies.
I feel like
he's
just dropped him off at college the other day.
Yeah, I mean, he feels like a contemporary of us who's making it great now. He's really breaking out.
He's one of those guys that you think about it. He has grown up in front of us. I mean, we've seen him through high school all the way to where he is now.
I feel like
now.
I know him.
Right, yeah.
But he's a great at body language. Does anybody slump better than John Cho slumps
looking
in profile?
Defeat, yeah.
I mean, does anybody do that better?
No.
In a grainy video on a screen life movie. No.
That's a great point. Yeah. He does that. He's got to speak with his body a couple times.
He's an all-time screen life body language performance.
That should be a new category instead of best popular film.
Michelle Lah, I thought she does a very nice job as a daughter.
Yep.
Again, Elsie Fisher kind of did.
Well, they're asked to do different things. Elsie Fisher would be the main protagonist of that story, and Michelle Lah certainly.
She's making YouTube videos with 1,000 gestures of subtext that were weaving into that brilliant Bo Burnham screenplay that make more. I mean, this works. Michelle Lah plays elusive enough. Like her performance is elusive enough so that we're trying to figure her out, and the father's trying to figure her out throughout this searching story.
Yeah, and she's only given so much screen time to act in real time. Everything else is kind of, we're supposed to be seeing through videos and clips and stuff like that. So I thought she was more than adequate for what she needed to do.
So the brother, Joseph Lee as Peter, he has a tough job in this movie. In terms of, you know, again, he's another character that's very elusive.
You don't
know what he's doing. We'll get into it in spoilers. But I think he kind of gives the worst performance. It's hard to judge, and I'm being a judgmental bastard here. But the worst performance in the ensemble. But again, he's trying to kind of walk a thin line what he's doing.
I mean, he's given the worst performance out of, what, four people? It's not like we have a wide cast of characters here.
He gets a little on the nose what he's kind of pulling off. But Deborah Messing has the juiciest performance of the group.
And I thought she was outstanding.
She's terrific.
I would love to see her more.
Well, she has big crying scenes. Yeah. She has, you know, hard-nosed detective
stressed
scenes.
Out, she's, at her wit's end, yeah.
Absolutely. You know, commiserating with a fellow parent, with John Cho. I mean, she gets the most back and forth with him, certainly. So the performances are strong in a chamber piece, which is what this really is.
Yeah.
A lot of limitations to this.
You're right. I mean, you're literally performing within a box, so you can't really move off screen that much, except for the one scene where they kind of allowed their characters to have more exploring, and even then it was only two rooms worth.
So the genre could allow for some acting showcases, but again, there's just not a lot to act off of. You know,
there's certainly not a lot for like expressions, and like you said, John Cho did a great job for what he had to do and the time he was given to do that. But I thought for what they were given to work with, I really was impressed with a lot of these performances overall.
So some final non-spoiler thoughts here, Mike. I think this is a really good time at the movies. I think it's an innovative spin. I think it's some credence for the genre at large. I'm not surprised there are 14 more of these in the works with all these specs you mentioned.
Go watch this. Honestly, go. I mean, it's late summer. It's just beginning of September. You're going to have a little free time, whether you're going back to school or you're dealing with kids, stuff like that. You need an hour and a half, hour, 45 minutes to kill. This is a great movie.
So I did have a question for you, Mike, with this screen life genre bursting onto the scene over the last 2 years with the Unfriended movies that just changed your life. The
greatest movies of all time, yes.
Is there another genre that could be done with this gimmick? You know, because the found footage kind of stayed in its lane with horror movies, with thrillers, really with horror movies. It really didn't bust out anywhere else. Could you pull off a rom-com?
That's the exact one I was thinking of. You can't see a rom-com doing this?
Could you make a chamber piece drama just with this?
I think drama would be difficult.
Could you do an action movie where you only have kind of quote-unquote a found footage gimmick, but where you only have security cameras showing you, you know, somebody surviving a disaster, somebody surviving a shooting, somebody surviving, you know, a very difficult situation.
Okay, so in order, rom-com, I think, yes. I think it's the one it most easily lends itself to, and I can't wait to shit all over that when it happens about these two people that find love via FaceTime.
You've got mail, literally, the movie based on.
Yes, yes.
Can that happen
and
in the YouTube era?
I can fear my ire being raised about
in
that.
In the Snapchat era, could that happen?
So that, I think, is going to happen. What was the second one before action?
Well, before action, I mean, a chamber piece. You know, chamber pieces. So could there be a Hateful Eight of screen life movies?
I think a drama, a dramatic piece in general like that.
A 12 Angry Men of screen life movies. If 12 Angry Men was remade, could it be remade in a screen life movie?
No, because I just recoiled in disgust. No, don't do that. I don't know. I think a drama would be the most difficult of those three. Action could be interesting for like an indie action movie or a low budget action movie to be done in a grainy footage way, type like that.
Surviving a hostage situation, just, you know, your
computer. I think
there's
something to play with, absolutely, there. With action. I think that's a really innovative way. And I think
using
security
cameras, somebody in the office, like an office security guard, the diehard of screen life movies.
Right. And it shaves down the budget that you would need
hire
to pull off a huge action.
Hire me,
Bez Lips. I think there's the most innovative wiggle room with action movies. Okay. I think we're going to see a rom-com or two like this. Drama, straight up drama would be tough to pull off. So we'll see what happens, but that's where we kind of land on it. I assume this is a watch for you.
This is a watch for sure, absolutely. And the spoiler section will be fun.
Yeah, let's dance. Spoilers ahead!
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
Mike, and Oscar! Oscar Sprint, spoilers!
All right, you heard the music. This is the spoiler section for Searching. Mike, and Oscar. Oscar's Sprint Profile. We always do a non-spoiler and a spoiler review for each movie that we put through the OSP ringer. So if you do not want to know the spoilers for Searching, if you have not seen the movie yet, this is a good place to stop. Go see the movie, come back, and hit play from there on out. If you have seen the movie, you want to hear our takes on it, or you're just interested to hear what happened and the twists and turns of this movie, you are in the right place. So let's talk about the spoilers for Searching. Michael.
So I knew the brother wasn't in an inappropriate relationship as my first carryover here, Michael.
You knew this.
I knew this. It kind of saw the scaffolding. So, Mike, my worst scene slash sequence of the film was that kind of tip off. Like, I knew, all right, we're in the kind of build for Act Two. Maybe this is just me knowing too much about the scaffolding of the screenwriting.
Okay.
But I was like, all right, we're going to get a major red herring now. And then he's going to his brothers.
I see.
His brain is going wild with all the implications. Oh, his brother is in an inappropriate relationship with his niece. Come on. It's not
I will happening. Say, though, I, that would have been, it would have been a little, it would have been interesting, actually. I kind of totally bought it that it was happening. But if you're just, again, the brother set up, gave all these text messages last night was amazing. We have to do that again sometime. John Cho thinks that means an inappropriate relationship is happening. And the brother reveals that, no, they were just smoking weed together. If you're just smoking weed with someone, those are some salacious texts to send just for weed smoking. It was amazing last night. It was so fun. We got to do it again. It's a little weird.
Yeah, it just doesn't work for me, that whole thing. So, yeah, you mentioned how it contrived. And then the whole the drama of it didn't work for me, and I kind of knew it was a red herring there. If you're an hour and a half into a movie, you got to be ready for, and you're a mystery, you know there's going to be a series of red herrings.
Right. That's a good point. I was a sucker for it, but you're absolutely right in your analysis. What did you think of John Cho's acting in that scene, collapsing to the floor?
There's a payoff at the end of it. It's one of those things where we talked about Mission Impossible Fallout, where even though kind of our worst sequence of the movie, or even though the fact that there's a, you tip off the biggest mystery of the film, there's a payoff beyond it. So I think the screenwriter knew that even if I don't get audiences with this, even if I, just yield to convention, I'm okay with it because it still works as a dramatic payoff, or I don't feature it so much that I can get past it quickly in that scene because I have a second payoff of the scene.
Right.
I'm not totally dependent on that mystery working and shocking you.
Was there any part of you during that scene that thought it was going to end in John Cho accidentally or on purposely taking his brother's life and then finding out afterwards that they actually got the rightful guy? Because he was ignoring the text messages at first. He wasn't picking up Deborah Messing's character's calls. And he was so just seething with anger and rage towards his brother. I thought maybe that's the direction they were going, whether rightfully or wrongfully, whether an inappropriate relationship did happen or not. I thought he would have been under the impression that his brother did it, ignoring the calls, kills his brother, finds out afterwards, and John Cho ends up in jail.
Yeah, I think, you can let your mind play with all the red herrings, right? And I think these movies, that's part of the fun. I just think, if one red herring kind of is tipped off and you know it's a red herring, that doesn't totally diminish the movie for me, because especially when I don't guess the very end of the movie. Like, that's why everybody talking about Fallout, Mission Impossible Fallout, or this movie, for instance, this is a perfect example. Just because something doesn't work in the middle of Act Two, or you follow the story, or you guess that next stage of the story, like, it doesn't make any sense. Everybody's mad about Fallout because they, you guess something early on and that ruins your movie-going experience. Yeah, that's the most important thing in a movie? In a fucking action movie? In a mystery, just because you guess something early Act 2 or late Act 2, what's wrong with that?
No. I agree. I mean, usually, unless it's something like Scream, where you need to know who the killer is, if that's not given away, yeah.
Yeah, if you guess the final reveal of the movie, and you guessed the word Rosebud. Okay, I could spoil that one. But no, I didn't even spoil it. I
saved
just
you
alluded
two long,
to it.
Boobless hours. Yeah.
But if you guessed that at the end of the whole thing,
right?
Okay, fine. The movie was ruined for you,
right.
Or you guessed that
totally
you're too
agree.
Smart for the movie. But yeah, so I'm a little against the criticism of this or fallout there.
Any other worst scene for you from this?
Oh, I mentioned earlier the opening montage with the wife. It didn't work on me the first time I'm watching it, but the emotional stakes of it really worked on me in terms of the father's relationship.
What did
with
you not like about it?
I was just thinking of that Pixar movie because I knew she was going to die.
Right.
Immediately. I was tipped off to it again. So, again, it didn't hold my suspense or tipped off that it was going to happen. But it worked on me later in the film. Like, I'm invested in John Cho's character. I'm feeling for Margot. I'm worried for her. I'm thinking about Mark Day and Elsie Day, not Elsie Day, but Kayla Day from eighth grade there.
You think it's just to establish that he's on his own, but really it is a tipping point about their relationship. I thought that was well done.
That was touching, and it pays off with the brother stuff, even though that didn't quite work for me. But I'm believing the father-daughter relationship. I'm believing how much they really care for one another. And it's going back and forth, even though they fail miserably to communicate with one another, which is it's an archetypal story about fathers and daughters and parents and kids anyway, which works so well for the genre. That's why the screenwriting, I do think it's a star of the movie, because they play on that conflict between fathers and daughters, parents and kids, and they make it into a mystery thriller, and they have the father-daughter of, or the father-daughter of the hero against the mother-son of the villainous forces going against each other.
Yeah.
It's a bit contrived with Deborah Messing, but it works so well. They set it up and paid it off.
I don't think that was contrived. Because it's basically it's two ends of the spectrum of what are you going to do for your kid when you're pushed beyond your limits.
It surprised the hell out of me.
Yeah.
And it worked in terms of a payoff and then a sequence of payoffs.
Right.
Like, I'm feeling great. You're sitting there next to me in the seat.
Never trust Will and Grace. Never trust Deborah Messing.
I love that line. That was a great experience for us in the movies. And it delivers those thriller mystery goods, no question about it. But yes, I mean, you think back to it and you're like, all right, the cop who is investigating this story is actually at her son is at fault. That's a little contrived. That's what I'm
saying.
Well,
the part, and that's probably my worst scene, the part that the tip-off is that she volunteered to do it and wasn't assigned it, I thought that was kind of weak.
But the web of lies is brilliant.
Oh, yes.
And I love that. I love the series of reveals and telling us, because we're like...
Which is my best. I mean, the reveal is my best scene, is that when he finally comes to his conclusion, comes to the knowledge that she's that, and then immediately you go to she's arrested, she gives the full story about what happened with her son.
Right.
All she was doing was being a parent, too. And that the breadcrumbs that lead you there, because you remember back when she's telling the story about the fake charity that her son was collecting money for, and she covered for him then.
Yes.
So you know she's that type of parent.
I will happily reanalyze this script and quote unquote re-engineer it, because I would love to see how they did that.
Yeah.
And really built up this mystery to the point where you have to break it down. So the screenplay is very strong.
Yeah, you're probably right.
In terms of kind of some other big moments from this story, I love the catfish setup and reveal, obviously. I think I was tipped off to it.
I fucking knew it. The whole goddamn time.
Nobody
is that pretty naturally.
True. And once they had the fake picture and then the real picture, but that's just like such a juicy setup and payoff that even if
on your arm going up,
yeah, it's one of those things. Like, even if you know it, when you see Tom Cruise climb the helicopter, it's worth it. When you figure out that beautiful redhead is actually a picture taken by a catfisher, it's worth it because it's Deborah Messing's creepy son and you want to know more about those people.
It also shows you how impactful the score is, because that standard, that stoic picture of the redheaded girl, the redheaded model, how she's, you know, just a smiling character, she's a stock photo, etc. And then the score comes in the second time you see her, because she's on the funeral website and John Cho realizes it's all a mess and not what it seems to be, and the score is the underscore of that, and it's the dung.
So the smile
gets so creepy.
I don't think I got into any of my best scenes, because I loved that whole UCAST montage, not montage, but kind of, you know, clicking on all those videos of the daughter. Margot's performances there are excellent.
Yes,
John Cho's reactions there are excellent, and then of course that plays into the script where it really builds to where you're freaking out before you realize she's quote-unquote murdered
right
in at least that timeline there. obviously it's a huge sense of relief when you realize she's not murdered, and that plays so well with
and how she's not murdered too is story. Very, very creative, because it's almost memento-ish in a way, in the way that these innocuous moments happened early in the script, and you find out they all mean something.
Right.
Every little one, that rainstorm that keeps them from searching on the second day is what saves Margot's life and why she's still alive on the fifth day.
I love how she's you got the connections to the ex-cons in those photographs.
Yes.
And that's so great.
Yes.
The one that she kills,
yep.
Obviously she murders as a cop to protect her kid. That's great. That reveal, oh, that's just, I mean, it's again, it's just a great payoff.
Yes.
In terms of the screenwriting.
Totally.
So I want to re-engineer the script and analyze it, because they did a great job setting things up.
Yeah, this is another one I want to rewatch. I thought that, and Deborah Messing, again, playing a bad guy and playing the antagonist that you
right.
find, that the big reveal.
My best scene, though, Mike, I keep getting, because there's a lot of stuff to like here, but my best scene is that memorial service for Margot, where John Cho walks himself into the frame and then stares at Deborah Messing. You get all the big, you know.
Is he going to yell? Is he going to fight her? What's he going to do?
One after another, those imposing cops walk into the
yep.
scene. They got their guns on her, and it's just like. And
so well done.
It's serious.
Yep.
Like, you just, wow, this is a situation I would never see in my real life, or I hope to never see in my real life.
And again, the creativity of how that you think that funeral service introduces itself in the email to John Cho's character, and it's so selfish and just self-important, and it's
right.
really being inconsiderate of its father who just lost his daughter. Well, no, it's actually going to be the medium through which we see that storyline wrap up.
But it's amazing, like, in your mind, it's almost like a great novel, right? Like, you go on a psychological journey in a great novel, or when you're reading a thriller that really works, and you just watch those two actors staring at each other, Deborah Messing from the pew, John Cho from the aisle, and you're thinking of the swirl of thoughts going through both their
mm-hmm.
heads. That's just so juicy.
Yeah.
It's such a payoff for an audience member watching a stare down. Doesn't that work
yeah,
so well? That's such
absolutely.
A testament to a story and the psychological journey of it.
Well, with part of that, too, is what before the cops come in, you don't know what's going to happen. You really don't know what he's capable of, because this is the first time on
but
movie.
You know,
he
when
knows...
you sit next to Mike number one, who said, oh, my God, you can never trust Will and Grace.
Never trust Will and Grace.
Will
I told
never
you that.
Trust
I'm going to rest
so
on my
you
family
know,
crest.
You know that she's, at this point, the falling action of the scene
yeah.
is telling you that
well,
she's
she,
at fault.
That's the first time that he knows for sure she's involved.
Right.
100%. And so he's just staring at her, and you're like, is he going to attack this woman
and
at
then,
his daughter's own funeral?
Right. And then the payoff
yeah.
is those big goon-looking
right.
cops, those serious-looking cops. I know
those
a lot of
boulders
those
with legs walking
through,
yeah.
Yeah, they're just heroes,
right.
and they look like heroes. That's
totally.
The crazy thing. So they come in, and that's so intimidating. That's really badass, is
yeah,
what
yeah.
I'd like to say. And the fact that it's respect paid to Deborah Messing's character as a female detective, they're coming in hot to arrest her.
And then we see the fallout from there. We see her interrogation. We finally do. I thought we were going to be kind of left on a cliffhanger, but we do get the entire exposition as to what happened that night. And the twists and turns throughout how she did have the convict involved, killed
Love
him.
It
was. I thought it was such... You're right. The storytelling, the screenwriting was so well done. The performance of Deborah Messing, too, was awesome.
So I might have talked myself into a bit higher grade than I gave it originally, because I kind of put it on the same level of insane, and I gave it a B+ 87, but I might have talked...
That's high.
Did we talk ourselves into an 88? Should I raise an insane
I'm an 86.
Bit?
I'm an 86. Okay. A solid B+ line.
So I wrote down 87. I want to give it an 88 now because I've hyped myself up. I only saw this one once. We just saw it
right.
yesterday together, hand in hand.
Of course, as we always do.
Buttery hand in hand, because you had to buy popcorn. I didn't even want it. I was like, oh, this is going to make
you
me
know,
sick.
It was a total waste of money. I barely ate any, too.
Oh,
I just
did
had,
you?
Yeah, I covered it in butter, and then I just threw it on the floor.
I just literally groaned. You came in, you have to eat this. We are fat men. You have
that's,
to eat this.
That's exactly how it went. Yes.
And I was like, brr. Grab some. But it was a great movie going experience.
You
again, you want to talk to me at the urinal after the movie.
Yeah.
All the time. You want to have a full podcast.
I just
at the
need
urinal.
To know your thoughts immediately.
Like right there.
Because you always, you just and I'm just stew and you marinate. And I need
internalize.
To know.
Like,
I just need
to
know.
And nobody's speaking and it's awkward at the urinal regardless.
Screw them. Screw
in
them.
A bathroom in life. That's just awkward male, you know, existence.
I'm sorry. I'm comfortable in my peeing.
Five
patterns.
Men peeing at the urinal and Mike's like, yeah, so you can't trust Will and Grace and let's deliver our podcast
right here. I've been
waiting
for years for Deborah Messing to turn on me.
So do you think there's any, what do you think the Oscar lens is going to be at that, buddy? Just me and you peeing at the urinal.
Just answer me and we could, this would be over.
I guess I have to now. And I guess we'll have an ongoing joke with this, us talking at the urinal. What's our talking at the urinal segment this week, Mike?
That's what we've been missing.
We've
been
missing.
That's the linchpin.
Yeah. There it is. Yeah. There's the launching point.
That's it. All right. Well, so your final grade?
87. 87.5. That's where I'm kind of at.
All right.
Now.
87.5. If it was a student, you got to round up to an 88 then. You know that.
Okay.
All right. I'll be an 80, 86 solid. I was an 85 coming out of it, but I think you did talk me into another point. But yeah, great movie. Entertaining movie. Entertaining
crowd
experience.
Crowd pleaser. Yeah.
So people clapped.
There's nobody who hasn't seen it who's listening to spoilers right now. But if you have seen it, you know, do you agree with us? I mean, is this kind of a, did this deliver goods? Are you pleased as a crowd member?
And are we wrong on this? Is it worth an Oscar something in your eyes? Can you see it a lock for a nomination, whether a performance
but
or a screenwriting?
This is like a top 25 movie of the year so far
for
me. We're in goddamn August, September. We're 3/4 of the way into the movie going year. And we feel great about this one as a top film.
So we want to know your thoughts as well, your thoughts on the movie and on this podcast. You can leave them to us at Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on Twitter, MikeMikeAndOscar.com, MikeMikeAndOscar at gmail.com, MikeMikeAndOscar wherever. Yeah, just type in.
We're not on UCast.
No, we're not on UCast. Not yet, anyway. We're not on UCast, and we don't like fish and chips.
No.
Otherwise, Mike, any final words of wisdom here?
Oh, man, we are so susceptible, you and I, to getting catfished. I'm just so afraid of the internet
it's
after watching this
movie. Probably already happened.
Yeah, I mean, but that genre plays on the fears of 30-somethings who don't quite get the internet.
Yeah.
And this movie is going to, I think this movie is going to make a ton of money, quote unquote, on digital video.
There's a likelihood I've been catfished and was supposed to meet someone and just got too lazy to show up.
Wow,
and so
you're
it's just
a
like
longing
some
heart.
55-year-old grumpy old man waiting in a parking lot for me somewhere.
True. Yeah. No, you're right. And you're the fantasy in your brain, or really it's not a fantasy. It's a horror movie that plays out in your fantasies.
Yeah.
In your brain.
That's right.
Is probably true. I'll confirm for you now.
Reality sucks, guys. Keep watching movies with us. We will see you in a couple days with another episode. And stay tuned for later this week, next week. We don't know. But The Nun is in the pipeline. So be on the lookout for that. And we will see you soon.
See ya.